M-A-N-D.
Welcome, everyone, to the April 12, 2011 meeting of the Senate Committee on Business, Transportation, and Economic Development. We've got a lot of things on the agenda today. A number of them, we do not have amendments and or fiscal or revenue impact, so we will be carrying over a number of items. We're going to start... Well, we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 506. Richard.
Senate Bill 506 allows employees and firms of at least 25 employees to take family leave to deal with the death of a family member. It limits the period of leave due to death of a family member with 2 weeks or 6 weeks with medical verification. It requires that leave due to death of a family member be counted towards the total period of authorized family leave. There's also a Dash 1 amendment, which removes the additional 6 weeks of family leave allowed with medical verification. There is no revenue impact, and there is minimal fiscal impact.
Are we in work session?
Mm-hmm.
Chair, I'd move the Dash 1s.
Senator Atkinson has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 506. Discussion? Senator Girard, I think the Dash 1s addressed your concerns.
Yes.
Any opposition? There's none. Dash 1s are adopted. Senator?
Would move Senate Bill 506 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 506 as amended by the Dash 1s to the floor with a due pass. Discussion? Is there any opposition? Seeing none, Senate Bill 506 as amended by the Dash 1s is moved to the floor with a due pass by unanimous vote of the committee. We'll close the work session on 506 and we'll open on Senate Bill 56. Oh, excuse me. I'm on the wrong one.
Oakwood.
I meant 36. Senate Bill 36.
You need a carrier on the last bill.
I need a carrier on the last bill. That would be Senator...
Oakquist.
Senate Bill 36 requires that the OLCC to make an unfavorable determination on a license application in cases where local jurisdiction submits in writing an unfavorable recommendation on the license. It prescribes cases where the OLCC may make a favorable determination even if the local jurisdiction submits in writing an unfavorable recommendation on the license. We also have a Dash 3 amendment which replaces the individual measure. It modifies the grounds by which the Oregon Liquor Control Commission may refuse to license an applicant to include the applicant being convicted of violating any law in Oregon or other state that substantially relates to the fitness and ability of the applicant to carry out activities under the license.
Okay, so would anybody like to speak to the Dash 1s? I understand that the industry, the restaurant industry was okay with it and OLCC was okay.
Dash 3s.
I see that. Chair moves the Dash 3 to Senate Bill 36. Is there any opposition? Dash 3s are adopted. Chair moves Senate Bill 36 as amended by the Dash 3s to the floor with a due pass. Discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Seeing none, Senate Bill 36 is amended by the Dash 3s is moved to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Senator Monis Anderson will carry. All righty, let's see. We'll close the work session on 36 and open a work session on Senate Bill 485.
Senate Bill 485 allows the real estate agency to issue cease and desist order and maintain action for injunction against a person who engages or is about to engage in professional real estate activity without a license. It declares an emergency effective on passage. There's also a Dash 1 amendment which has already been adopted by the committee. It removes the provision that allows the real estate agency to issue a cease and desist order and maintain action for injunction against a person who engages in escrow activities without a license, and clarifies that the real estate agency may only issue a cease and desist order subject to the Administrative Procedures Act.
Senators, that's the bill that the chair screwed up on, and we moved the amendment but forgot to move the bill last time. So we might want to do that. So the chair would move Senate Bill 485 as amended to the floor if they do pass.
Better do it quick, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion?
No.
Is there any opposition? Seeing none, Senate Bill 485 is moved to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendation. And I believe that would be Senator Bonamici will carry that. All right, what have we got now?
863.
Don't think we're ready on that. I think the only other one we are ready to deal with today is Senator Stark, did you want to discuss 969?
So, Mr. Chair, there's a couple of folks here that would like to have the opportunity just to briefly give a quick snapshot of captive insurance, and I think Teresa Miller's here from the Insurance Division. You would allow for such a thing, we could, I think, get this done in 5 to 7 minutes.
Okay, so we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 969.
And Mr. Hargis, Bob, there you go.
Thank you.
Two of them.
Thank you, committee members, for your time and service today, as well as in this session. My name is Robert Basie from the law firm of Kell Alterman Runstein, and with me I have Gary Hargis from Empire Pacific Insurance. We are the proponents of SB 969, which is a bill to authorize bringing captive insurance companies to the state of Oregon. 29 other states have already adopted captive insurance legislation, and I'd like the opportunity to have the state of Oregon consider similar legislation, which will hopefully drive business to the state, it'll drive commerce to the state. It'll provide a mechanism for companies both in the state and outside the state to provide insurance to themselves. Now, the type of insurance would be very limited in terms of coverage, as well as the type of companies that would be allowed, and that would be governed by statute, as well as by regulation in working with the insurance department. A captive insurance company is a specialized form of insurance company that simply provides insurance to one of its owners, not to third parties or to the public as a whole. We find that a number of industries, as well as most of the Fortune 500 companies, have one or more captive insurance companies. And we also believe that Oregon may be losing some business because captive insurance companies are not permitted in the state currently. As a member of the law firm Kell Alterman Runstein, I've assisted many companies in providing captive insurance companies for their businesses, and we've had to look outside the state. I'd really like the opportunity to keep that business here in the state and hopefully grow the insurance department through the mechanism of the captive insurance companies.
Mr. Chair, it might be appropriate to have Teresa Miller come up real quick to just highlight the agreement that's been proposed, that we will work this particular piece of legislation during the interim, come back with a pre-session filed bill for the February session. And Teresa, if you just would comment on this, get it on the record, and we can be done again.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Teresa Miller. I'm the administrator of the Insurance Division at the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and we have been working very closely with the proponents on this legislation. We would like to work with them over the next several months and bring a bill back in February. There are, as was mentioned earlier, there are extensive regulations that will go along with this law if you all choose to adopt it. So what we've committed to doing with the proponents is working with them over the next several months to put together the appropriate language to fit an Oregon statute, which was just one of the concerns we had in terms of the bill as it got drafted. So we'll work on that language and then also work on potential regulations that we could adopt soon after the February session if you all adopt the law. So thank you.
We'll see you next year, huh?
Right.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you for the hearing. Thank you all very much.
I have nobody else signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on this bill? All righty. We will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 969. And I think the only one else we've got that we could discuss, Senator Starr, do you want to discuss your amendment to Senate Bill 128?
Certainly.
We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 128, and we have amendments in the packet. And Matt, if you want to come up as well.
I understand.
That's good enough for me.
I don't know, Senator, did you want to go through them from the dais here?
I can. I'm looking for them. I'm sure they're in my packet here somewhere. I didn't print off an extra copy. Was it at the back? Should be up there. Senate Bill 128, I found it. So,
here it is.
Colleagues, this is amendments to Senate Bill 128. This is our opportunity to address some of the issues that have come out of the House Bill 2001 that the legislature passed in 2009. And just real quickly, there's a couple of things. In Senate Bill 2001, House Bill 2001, there was Section 64 where the legislature identified specific projects with specific dollar amounts. What we found is that some of those projects have come in under budget, and the projects are very specific, so there's money kind of sitting on the table. And in Section 2 of the Dash 4 amendments, we lay out a process whereby the legislature will pass legislation to reallocate or decide how to spend that money. This is going to be an ongoing conversation, quite honestly, because these projects will be let over the next several years. This is one senator speaking, but how I envision a process would be where there would be a cross-section of legislators, Republicans and Democrats from the House and the Senate that would work with the department during the interim to figure out what makes the most sense about how to spend those dollars. Some projects may not have enough money that were allocated, and maybe make sense to move dollars to those projects that in other projects where the bids have come in lower. But at the end of the day, it'll be the legislature, not the Oregon Transportation Commission, that will decide how to spend those dollars. That's what Section 2 is about in the amendment. Section 3 of the Dash 4 amendments, basically this is a situation whereby the federal government comes in with a stimulus-type dollars, grants to the state. The Section 3 of the amendments, all it does is require the department to consult with the legislature, the appropriate committees of the legislature, prior to expending those resources. As we saw in the last conversation as it related to that was in 09 with the ARRA funds. Again, this is one senator speaking, but it seemed to me that the legislature had a very minimal role in determining how those dollars got spent. And this doesn't allow the legislature to decide how those dollars are spent, but it does require a conversation, and I think that's appropriate. That's the Section 3 of the amendment. Section 4 of the Dash 4s, again, addresses an issue that was in Senate Bill or House Bill 2001 related to the Selwood Bridge. Again, if you'll remember, in House Bill 2001, we gave Multnomah County and Clackamas County the authority to raise the local registration fee to fix the Selwood Bridge. Only in the statute that we passed, it didn't say Selwood Bridge. It said any bridge that crosses the Willamette River. This specifies the Selwood Bridge, narrows it down to the Selwood Bridge. That's the next several sections in the amendment. Takes you to Section 7 of the amendment. Section 7 of the amendment talks about a statutory legislative committee called the Multi-State Highway Transportation Agreement. It's been in statute for a very long time. Legislators are members of this. It's the Western States, basically, transportation legislators. This would direct the Department of Education, Department of Transportation, to appoint a staff person to attend these meetings and to pay the dues of the organization. Section 8 of the amendment repeals The congestion pricing pilot project that was in House Bill 2001. That was a project that was near and dear to my heart, but as you got into the process, I don't believe that it's working in the way that I'd hoped that it would work. I don't think anybody's going to shed any tears if this particular pilot goes away, if we were to repeal this particular statute. And it potentially creates a conflict as it relates to the Columbia River crossing and tolling at some point in the future. So that's the Section 8. Section 9 and Section 10 are just our implementation date. So that's the crux of the amendment, Mr. Chair, section by section.
Okay, that's a question.
You sure can. Senator Atkinson.
So start Section 3... why wouldn't we have the legislature decide? We're the legislature, House and Senate, are the ones that represent the area, know about the transportation, deal with all the constituent concerns. Why wouldn't we just decide?
Well, other states do provide their legislature greater leeway about how to spend those federal dollars. The language really in Section 3 is compromise language. You see these are the dash 4s. The dash 1s perhaps were different in how they were constructed, and quite honestly generated significant opposition. And at the end of the day, I'd like this bill to pass, and I'd like the governor to sign the bill. And I believe that this is a step in the right direction.
May I ask a question?
You sure can.
Senator Starr, who's in opposition? The executive branch or lobby groups?
Both. This would, the language, if you're talking about federal funds and how those federal funds come into the state, some of them come directly to local governments, and some of them come directly through the department but are aimed toward local governments. And you have the State Transportation Improvement Plan, the STIP. Every project in the STIP, because that's a federal document, would likely be ultimately potentially caught up in this idea if the legislature were to have its hands in every project that had federal dollars in it. It tends to potentially becomes a very large issue for the legislature to handle. I'm not saying that we couldn't figure out how to do it, again, because other states have, but the executive branch would certainly be opposed to having the legislature dictate how we how the department were to spend federal funds. Again, I believe the language in Section 3, as it is in the dash 4, is a compromise. I believe it is a major step in a direction where which requires the department to work cooperatively in consultation with the legislature. Ultimately, the legislature does provide in their budget, expenditure limitation in their budget for these kinds of things. But we haven't, as a legislature, as a state, historically gotten involved in determining how to spend those federal dollars as it relates to specific projects.
Perhaps you've heard of the discussion on the national level called earmarks.
Yeah. But Mr. Chair, even though Oregon state government has been run by one party for 30 years, we're not a monarchy.
Mm.
The legislature has the checkbook, and we are the policy-making branch of government, not the executive. That's the issue. And for 30 years, on not just transportation, but in other things, you can set up a board and a commission to stand out policy, irregardless of the legislature, and the legislature is supposed to blindly write a check. And that's not right. And so I'm just asking, if Section 3 is a continuation of that 30-year practice, or not? That's my question. Probably larger than ODOT, but...
Well, it is a large conversation, and really it's one that I think that, you know, that the legislature ought to have at some point, and probably not particularly in this bill, but in a broader...
I'd like to have in this bill.
Probably in a...
Stop for the day.
Waiting for transportation.
In a broader context,
is it really?
The role of the legislature as it relates to how we interact with the executive branch. I personally would like the legislative branch to stand up for itself. to be that co-equal, you know, branch of government, stand up against the executive. But I also think that it's important that we move this bill forward today. And you know, at the end of the day, we got to get the executive to sign off on the bill. And so, you know, that's going to require a conversation.
Why don't we let Director Garrett address some of these questions in the bill?
Poor guy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it. For the record, I'm Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to Senate Bill 128 and the Dash 4 amendments. As we walk through this, there are actually four sections that I'll speak to, Sections 2, 3, 7, and 8. And literally just quickly walk through. Section 2, we certainly understand that this maintains the intent and the discipline that was behind the 2009 Jobs and Transportation Act conversation specific to Section 64, so we are comfortable with that direction. This is a long-term conversation. You'll recall that the Section 64 projects have a lifespan that extends out to the 2017 timeframe, so a lot of opportunity to engage the issue and make sure we're allocating proceeds that may be left on the table. Section 3, the specifics here, again, consultation with the legislature on the Recovery and Reinvestment Act-like package, certainly. There's not an issue there. What I'd like to do here is just make sure we understand what we're talking about. Again, we can speak about the federal stimulus monies that came in the 2009 timeframe with some of the disciplines attached to them in terms of the timelines associated with them, the prescriptive nature of where the monies could go and where they couldn't go, the multimodal aspect of where the funds could be sent. So legislative engagement, I think, is appropriate in this manner. Obviously, timely engagement, so as it's articulated in the bill during the legislative session or during the interim, making sure we have a forum to engage the discussion. We'll establish a process, a set of protocols, abide by the rules of engagement. Again, the federal dollars do indeed come with some strings, so we have to navigate those waters as well. What I think most importantly, so I understand that, and I'm comfortable with that. I want to make sure I understand what's not required of that level of engagement, just because of the complexity, the timings of federal dollars. It is my understanding that we would not be required to engage on the multi-year surface transportation package that goes through reauthorization, safety lieu, you've heard about. The bottom line, these are the formula dollars that are sent to the state of Oregon that fill up the preservation pots, the bridge pots, the various pots of money, just the normal flow of transportation money. The earmarks, if indeed, while that conversation is still playing itself out at the federal level, whether there will be or there won't be, again, those are pretty prescriptive in nature. And then finally, discretionary grants that this agency would aggressively pursue at the federal level. Again, there is a process through ways and means in which we engage. So, as I understand it, if we have the opportunity and the feds do send us some type of economic stimulus packages and it meets the definitions as related to the American Reinvestment Recovery Act, fine, we're good with that. Section 7 speaks to the multi-state highway transportation agreement. Very comfortable making sure that we are staffing and helping pay the fees associated with that effort. And I say that in light of the fact that it's my understanding the conversation will grow a little bit. The scope of the work of this committee is growing beyond just a discussion specific about weight and size of trucks. So we're comfortable moving in that direction. And then Section 8, maybe just a little bit of help here. While we understand that the Dash 4 eliminates the pilot project upon passage of this bill, know that we're caught in somewhat of an in-between hop here. In terms of already engaged coming out of 2001, the JTA, we'd engaged in an effort. We're about halfway through. We haven't implemented, but we've identified something. And again, I think that is what it is. It's just we are continuing to move through the process. We have some reporting disciplines associated with my commission as well as some of your colleagues as we move the findings we have to date. Obviously, if this is animated, we unplug that activity. That's understood. So, in summary, the Department of Transportation is comfortable with the Dash 4 amendments.
Questions, Director Garrett?
Mr. Chair, I just had a technical question. On Section 8, did you say that that was the repeal of the congestion pricing? Tell me, this is my first time on the committee, so I'm not familiar with that.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick. In House Bill 2001, there was a section in the bill that required, and you'll look in Director Garrett's testimony, required Clackamas County, Multnomah County, Washington County, and the City of Portland and Metro to develop and implement a congestion pricing pilot in the Portland metropolitan area. So that's basically what it did, and they were in the process of going through that, you know, and to be honest, it's just, it's gotten caught up in politics, and it's just hasn't turned out to be the kind of process project that I envisioned it to be. I was the source, or I was the person who basically had this particular pilot put into the bill. I don't know that it's going to come out with anything of any significant positive fruit. I just don't think it's going to bear fruit. And so I would just suggest, and again, I don't think there's anybody that's involved in it that's going to necessarily be weeping about the fact that it's going away.
Mr. Chair, does this mean an abandonment of congestion pricing as a concept?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, no. I think that what it does is it refocuses our efforts on other projects, other places, to look at that particular venue or forum to raise transportation revenues.
Senator Starr, just to be clear on this, my understanding, and I wasn't here when you guys did that, that there was, kind of a two-step process. The first was a study, and then there was to be an implementation of a pilot, and my understanding of the implementation was to happen like in the next year.
Yeah, so
are we directing by this, or are we directing the department not to do a pilot?
Yes. So basically the timelines were really short in the bill we passed in 2009, and you know that was stressing the process.
Mm-hmm.
And originally in my mind I thought, well, let's just extend the deadline so that they had more time to work on it and get it right. The more that I looked at it and the more that I visited with the principals that were involved, it made sense to me just to pull the plug on the full thing, and that's what we do in this amendment. I don't want to, you know, it's frustrating because there's a lot of people that have spent a lot of time, there's been a lot of effort, a fair amount of money, not a significant amount of money, but a fair amount of money has been expended on it. But you know, as it comes down to it, it's just I just don't believe it's going to bear any fruit that's going to be helpful or fruitful or beneficial to the legislature as we look at, you know, how we're going to fund transportation projects in the future. And so it just, to me, made sense just to say, you know, admit that it was a good idea or maybe was a good idea, that maybe it's time not to move forward with it at this point.
But you do it that before you get the report.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up, what will happen in the projects that are underway? When will they be ended if this passes?
Maybe Director Garrett can answer the specifics of. There are no projects, but there are studies of particular potential projects.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, I think we've identified one project to recommend to move forward toward implementation. I would submit to you that the sponsor could move forward with that. I mean, I don't think we've compromised anything. I think to Senator Starr's point, maybe the timing wasn't right here. There are other issues that need to mature in order for us to fully engage this discussion. But I don't think, and this is just me talking, I don't think we necessarily need to stand down with a pilot project up in the Portland metropolitan area from the City of Portland, to be very honest with you. I still think that's viable if they want to pursue it.
So it would be up to them. It wouldn't be an ODOT project.
That's correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And just the other one, to be sure that everybody caught it, what we're doing with the Section 2 piece is that there are some monies that we will leave unspent. And I think that was in the project until we get back to it in some time. there are other projects on the list. Center Store was the original, I think you're the only one on the panel that worked on the original bill. Wasn't there a whole list of projects that didn't get funded? And is there a reason we just wouldn't kind of jump down to one of the other projects?
So thank you, Mr. Chair. There are a whole list of projects. I forget the total number, but a whole list of projects that in the bill list the project and a specific dollar amount tied directly to that project. And so in the one that I'm most familiar with that's under construction is the one in my district, Highway 26 expansion, where I think the number is $24 million in the bill. I can't remember the exact numbers, but the bid came in, $3 or $5 or $6 million less than the dollar amount. So the department can't expend that money. They can't do anything because the statute says this project, this dollar amount. So at some point in time, the legislature needs to come back around and look at, I think, all of those projects. As the negotiating group put that bill together, there was assumptions made. There were assumptions made on amount of money that was going to be available through the increases in fees that Oregonians are paying today that would fund the bonds, that would pay for those. A state portion, there were assumptions that we would have federal dollars come in through earmarks on particular projects. The Newburgh-Dundee bypass, for instance, has, again, I don't know the exact number that's in the bill, $192 million or something in the bill from the state. But there's an assumption that we're going to get, again, I'm making the number up a little bit, maybe $40 million or $60 million from the federal government to match that. So the legislature in the years ahead, I think, are going to have to address this issue probably every year. And thankfully, we're going to be here every year so that we can address it. We may not get a federal earmark on a particular project, or we may get more than we expect. And so there might be the opportunity then to move dollars around. I expect that the universe of projects are pretty much set. And so we may move dollars within those universe of projects. It would be up to future legislators and legislative assemblies to decide perhaps if there's a new project they want to add to the list, if, things were available to do that. This will be a conversation, though, between the department and the legislature to determine what makes the most sense.
I guess I'm a little concerned. I understand that. I'm a little concerned that we're leaving $5 million on the table when there are other projects that we could do. I don't know what they are, but at a time when we need construction jobs for another 8 months.
Well, the director would love to have the authority through the commission to expend, whatever that $5 million or $6 or $8 or whatever the dollar amount is. I just would suggest that it's appropriate for the legislature to weigh in on that conversation. And, if we wanted to do it in this particular, between now and sine die and June 30 or whatever day we go home, I'm interested and willing to have that conversation. And the language in this bill doesn't preclude us from having that conversation now. But the language in this bill or this amendment does require the legislature to act. We do not delegate our authority to the commission or to the department to determine how to spend those extra dollars.
Senator Atkinson,
who has the oomph in that conversation, though?
Ultimately, the legislature has to, if we pass this today, the legislature has the oomph because the department can't do anything because it's in statute. So we either pass legislation to give the authority to the commission, or we don't pass anything and the money sits there, or we pass something like what's in this amendment and it comes back to the legislature to have a conversation, or we pass some other measure that, we could say we're going to spend it on X project today. I mean, we could write that amendment in this particular bill today and say we're going to spend, we need to know what the number is. $6 million from what was allocated for Highway 26. Instead, we want to spend it on, the Beltline Freeway in Eugene or Highway 140 in Klamath Falls or whatever that project is.
It would be a good idea.
Yeah, see, he agrees with that. But ultimately, the legislature, it's our responsibility. We were the ones that identified those projects using
the bonds,
using the information that we got from the department, on, you know, what was expected these projects were going to cost, what some assumptions as it relates to the federal funds that we hope to come from Congress in a reauthorization. Again, we have a delegation that's well-positioned to help to send dollars our way. But ultimately, it's us. We're the ones that get to decide.
To answer your question, the Senators, historically, you know, for the last 100 years or so, that's what the Transportation Commission has done. Very well-known senator from your neck of the woods used to be considered the second most powerful position in the state behind the governor, sometimes more powerful. But I think if you understand how those plans come together, it's essentially a bottoms-up process from each community and each area. Now we have, they're called the ACTS, which I forget what that stands
for. Mr. Chairman, Area Commissions on Transportation.
They build the plans up from the city councils and county commissions and citizens, and they forward them up, and then collectively the commission puts that into a large plan, and which is operates under general authority from the legislature. But as Senator Starr said, in other states, sometimes that plan, when it's put together, then is sanctioned by their legislature.
There's no question, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there's no question that House Bill 2001 changed the paradigm. There was a paradigm shift about, you know, who's going to identify projects, and, you know, for the first time in Oregon history, we put a project list in statute. Doesn't generally happen. And what in the OTIA, I mean, going back to the OTIA projects, we defined projects by type. We didn't define specific projects. We said spend the dollars on these kinds of projects and continued to delegate the authority to the commission to identify projects that fit within various, you know, categories. House Bill 2001 that we passed, deviated from that past practice. And I think for good reason. I think one of the reasons why you didn't have that bill referred to the ballot was because legislators and, to a large extent, the public and stakeholders knew where their taxes were going to get spent.
Okay, off the theory. We are. Any other questions on the bill, Senator Giron?
Me, new to the committee, I'm having trouble on page 2 of the amendments, section 4. When we're talking about the establishment of registration fees, and then we put that the purpose of this is to replace the Selwood Bridge.
So, can I explain that?
Yeah, would you?
Yes, certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Girard, this doesn't change anything from House Bill 2001 except specify that the only bridge that Multnomah County and Clackamas County could raise local registration fees to fund is the Selwood Bridge. It specifically identifies the Selwood Bridge as the bridge that they have the authority, the state authority, to do. When we negotiated that 2 years ago, everyone knew or believed that it was the Selwood Bridge was the bridge that they were concerned about. That's why we gave these local governments, those local counties, the authority to do that. The language that ultimately was in statute was broader than that, basically allowed them to do a local fee for any bridge across the Willamette River. This is specific for the Selwood. So it doesn't change anything except specify the Selwood Bridge.
It's just the way that I read it. If a city wants to create a registration fee, they have the right to do it and register that with the Department of Transportation. In the way this is written, if they do that, then that money goes to the creation of the Selwood Bridge.
And the problem
would
be?
Yeah.
So you were thinking that Marion County might want to do that?
Yeah. I'm just not reading it right, but that's the way I read it. Maybe that's not.
Well, this is written for statute by legislative council, you know, so. And I'm not the author of the language. I told her what I wanted, and this is what we got back. So
okay, I think maybe that needs to be changed.
What's the Mr. Chair? Do you know what the population of Lane County is? It's a little over 200,000.
Well, 200,000.
Now you're killing me. I think the only counties that this I think the only county that this applies to is Multnomah County.
Is it?
Well, maybe.
I don't think Washington's quite there yet, nor Clackamas.
I think all Mr. Chairman, I think all three up in the tri-metropolitan area there.
Or at this level? That,
yes.
Or over 3 feet.
Yeah,
so you have three counties that this would apply to. Not Marion.
So it would be all within Metro then.
Yeah. Okay, further questions on this? Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Director Garrett. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on the Dash 4s or anything else in Senate Bill 128? We are in public hearing. No one from the counties? You're
Mr.
cool? 346,000. Okay.
Mr. Chair, just for the record, Lane County is 346,000. I'm amazed.
No.
Really?
Page 3, I think.
Yeah. We do not have the revenue or fiscal statements on this, so we cannot act on it today. So we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 128. And I believe that that's all that we have paperwork on that we can work on today on these. We do have an informational, just put it down. We've got tax credits that we have to deal with next week. And does anybody have any comments on where we're going on the tax credits or anything you want to share?
Oh, my, I know, but the thing is populations change.
My thoughts on the tax credits is that given the fiscal environment we're in, we need to be pretty conservative. I don't think personally that we want to move any new ones. The ones that we had two insurance-related bills that, as council advised us, technically really aren't tax credits. They don't perform as tax credits, and they're part of the structure. I think we probably want to move those, but obviously it's up to the committee. I have a personal interest. I think it makes sense to move the to renew the video,
film and video
one, and the industrial.
What about R&D?
R&D. That's the two. That's the ones I'm most interested in. Senator Starr last time had some feelings about the water that's never been used. So that's kind of where I'm leaning. I'd be curious where the rest of the committee is and what your thoughts are on that.
Mr. Chair, I'm absolutely a solid supporter of the R&D tax credit. I think that's important for us. So that would be an important one for me. The tax credits related to the enterprise zones. I think those are ones that are important as well.
Okay, that makes sense. Senator Edwards, do you have any comments?
I'd like to look at the list again.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Get them all in front of them. I'll let you know.
Okay.
By tomorrow. Johnson?
Very similar on R&D and the rural enterprise zone e-commerce. I don't know if e-commerce turned into, I got to go back and look at my file.
Okay.
But that sticks out.
Senator Rod, do you have any sense?
R&D is important, but it's not big in my district.
What's important?
Are you talking about tax credits?
Yeah.
I think it is. It's an important tax credit to keep. But it's just not important in my district.
Other transit vessels.
The migrant worker tax credit, and probably the rural, what kind of zone is it?
Enterprise zone.
That would probably be the two. They're very small ones. I do think the R&D tax credit is very important for the state, though.
Senator Burdick?
Film tax credit, very important in my area and a lot of other areas in the state.
Okay. Well, these will be are scheduled for Monday, so please plan on reviewing what you got there, and if you have any specific proposals in mind, I would suggest you get your amendments and get them to Richard beforehand so we can have him look at them. The chair's intent would be to try to move these and get a position down to Senator Burdick on her tax committee on Monday, if we can. So, anything else for the good of the committee? All bills that we didn't work on today, we will carry over. So, if there's nothing else, we are adjourned.
We didn't work on